Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Fitness Solution. I say this week's episode, it's been a while since I've actually managed to get one of these out. And that's for no reason other than just lack of content, laziness, I don't really know. But just a few things in the pipeline. Oh, plus I did have my wisdom teeth out, so that kind of put a bit of a spanner in the works in terms of me being able to talk for an hour to somebody who is hopefully going to help you in some way. Or help my listeners in some way. This week, I have a really awesome episode to share with you. I'm really chuffed with it. It has a guy called Atif on it, who's a member of the Fitness Collective. And he started following me on Instagram around the start of lockdown time. And he finally committed to coming into the Fitness Collective. And he's now obviously a friend and member of that. And we finally just managed to hook up and have a chat, like a proper good hour-long coaching call kind of chat together. And we cover all kinds of wonderful things. He's a lovely person. He's very intelligent. He knows a lot about fitness, but he's just trying to find the method that will stick for a long period of time, that being 2, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. He's looking for that solution. He's not looking for, you know, the 3-4 month quick fix solution. And that's what drew him to obviously my work and the Fitness Collective in general. And he's doing really well. He's doing so well. I'm so proud of him. And it was really nice to kind of spend a bit of time and get to know him a little bit better. So have a listen. It's full of great help, great tips, great advice, great questions. It's a really good episode, and it's always a pleasure to chat to members of the Fitness Collective. If you want to join the Fitness Collective, then all you have to do is head over to www.thegymstarter.com, and you can find it very, very easily on there. I also do online coaching, one-on-one personalized online coaching, and you can obviously sign up for that on my website as well, which is www.thegymstarter.com. Well, I say sign up, you won't sign up. Send me an email and we'll chat about it, and we'll see if it might work for you. Right, that's it from me. Without further ado, let's head over to the chat I had with Atif. Hello, Atif. How the devil are you?
Yeah, it's good. Things are going quite well, I think.
Good. Did you sleep well? Because I know you was on the coaching call last night.
Yeah, slept fine. It's a good night's sleep for a change.
Good. Lucky you. It's great to have you. Now, I know we spoke a couple of times previously, like on the weekly coaching calls in the Fitness Collective and things like that. So, but as I mentioned before, this is just kind of your opportunity to ask me what you want, one-on-one. This is your moment to really set yourself up in the best manner possible and, you know, get all those questions that you might have that you might just need figuring out, or things that have come up over the last 2 weeks or the last 2 years of your life that we can just chat through and figure out. So, you know, we'll go as deep as you want and everything else. So, I mean, fire away. What do you need help with the most?
We've obviously spoken about it before, but the reason I joined was the exercise side of things I am quite good with. I probably need some technical help in terms of like form and stuff like that, but once I can figure out how to video my stuff at the gym, I'll get into that. My whole thing is around the food thing, so I'm not going to say I have an unhealthy relationship with food, but I indulge quite a lot. I don't like, I, you know, whether it's night out or, you know, having a treat at the end of the day or whatever like that, and that's what seems to kind of take me over my kind of target of eating. And I've seen that pattern, like I've been recording on my Fitness Pal for years, and it seems to be the pattern where, you know, if what I eat normally is fairly healthy and it's quite good, but when it comes to like junk food and takeaways and eating out, that always seems to be the thing that totally destroys whatever kind of good things I've gained in terms of that. So yeah, I figured obviously all the other times I've tried to kind of get into shape and lose weight and, you know, kind of fix all my bits and bobs that are broken, it's kind of worked for a little bit, but long term it hasn't really done anything sustainable for more than I'd say maybe a year. So I figured, I obviously watched your stuff. I've obviously joined your online thing months and months ago, and I quite like the way you do things. And it's quite different. It's quite different from the way I look at things. So I figured having somebody with like a quite a different focus, kind of like a more lifestyle focus rather than a goal focus, is it seems like the way to go. So I figured I'd give it a go and join up and see how it goes.
Perfect. Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. I mean, I know like you popped up on my Instagram probably like near around the start of lockdown, possibly.
Yes.
I think it was around that time. And like he was always asking very insightful questions on there. You were very supportive on there, which to be fair, with you or without you joining the fitness collective means a hell of a lot to me anyway. But yeah, and like then the fact that that's developed into you coming on board is, and what I'm trying to say is I'm just really thankful that you find my stuff helpful, really. That's all, that's the number one thing. That means a lot to me. But talk more about kind of like your previous, and you said in what you were saying that you found like trying to take on a lifestyle approach as opposed to just a goal focused approach. You think that might be the answer. So talk previously about what your goal focused approach was like, what you've done in the past, where that's led you to, and kind of what kind of goals and why your focus went onto that as opposed to a more, should we say, fleshed out approach.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've never really had a problem with being like quite a big guy. I've always been quite big, apart from when I took a stretch when I was a teenager. I've always been quite a big guy, and it never really bothered me. But it all kind of changed when the wee one came along. I think as things do. So the year after she came along, I was quite laser focused. I downloaded the MyFitnessPal. I started logging in that. I went from eating like 3,500 calories a day to about 1,500, so it was quite a drastic cut.
That is a massive cut.
And I went from exercising like once or twice a week to three or four times a week, and over the space of kind of 5 months, I lost about 3 stone. And obviously for me, I was really happy. The goal was to get under 100 kilos, and then obviously the second half of the year, I lost a lot less. But I got to the end of the year and I'd lost something like, I don't know, 19, 20 kilos or something. It was a good turnout. And then basically at that point I started looking at maintenance. Come the new year and stuff, I added a couple of kilos on. I was fine with that. But then the problem came. I went in for knee surgery because I'd torn the cartilage behind my knee. So I had to go in for surgery, which kind of put me out of the game for a couple of months. And then a couple of months later, I had a problem with my asthma, so I was put on steroids for a couple of months. And by the time I got to the end of that, I put almost all the weight back on, so that was quite disheartening. And then the year after that, I was just like, I couldn't really be bothered doing anything. I mean, in terms of my fitness and exercise before all that, it was literally just finding exercise that I find quite enjoying. It's stuff that I just enjoyed doing, which is how I kept fit. So, cycling, basketball, played doing martial arts. Martial arts was quite a big focus for me. But obviously, it wasn't giving me the longevity I was kind of aiming for in terms of having a child and all that. So basically that year, the year after, I tried again, and the weight did come down a little bit, but I found the same results kind of going on year on year on year, where it would peak and drop and peak and drop. So and the thing that was quite disheartening is when it peaked, each peak seemed to be slightly higher than the last one. So when I went into this 5 years ago, I was 126 kilos. And then over the last kind of year and a half, it's peaked up at like 131. So I've actually gotten to my heaviest, which is really annoying. Obviously, I put in quite a lot of effort last year. I was training for a martial arts belt, and I went from kind of 130 to 112 last year. And I kind of kept that. I think going into lockdown, I was like 114, and that was about 9 months after I'd done the grading, which was the best maintenance I've done for a long time. And then obviously the lockdown happened, and I managed to keep it off for a couple of weeks, and then it just shot up. I got peaked up at like 122, which was really annoying. I managed to drop a couple by the time I came out of lockdown, but I'm kind of sitting at the 120 mark just now. So yeah, when I focus on the goals and I focus on the numbers, I'm fine. And then something happens, and my eye'll come off the ball. But I think the whole kind of lifestyle around it is kind of the focus that needs to be. I know I can do the exercise. I know I can have that focus for kind of 3 to 12 months type thing. But long term, it's not really kind of working.
Firstly, I think it's wonderful that you're talking in terms of like 3 to 12 months as a short term time period. And
Like, you know, 5 years is your long-term time period. I think that's just marvelous. Like, so many people who are listening to this will be thinking 12 months is a long time, and it's not. And a lot can happen in that time. You know, it's really still a short time period in terms of getting, you know, let's say you want to try and lose 30 kilos, say, which is sort of, you know, where you got yourself at. It's not going to happen in a year.
No.
And it's nice that you kind of you what I love about the way you're talking about it is you're very calm, very reasoned. You seem very logical. You know your numbers, which is great. How did you find slashing to 1500 from 3500? Like, was it manageable? Was it difficult? Was it, did you just, I don't know. Yeah, just talk to me about that. 'Cause that must be if you're a big, I mean, how tall are you?
Kind of 188, so kind of just almost 6 foot
About
two.
six. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you've probably got quite a high basal metabolic rate. Like it's kind of, yeah. So you'd have been at 1500, 1600, you'd have been quite a way under what your kind of maintenance calories would have been.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I worked it out myself, just by watching what my weight done. And I worked it out, it was like about 2900 was my maintenance. I think using the calculator on the website, it was about 3000, so it's really close to
Okay, perfect.
what I
That's
was looking
great.
at. So halving that, and obviously I was eating more than that before because obviously my weight was gaining, but halving that was quite a drastic cut. And you know, like I was quite highly motivated, and I did rely a lot on motivation, kind of back in the day. I was quite highly motivated, and for the first 3 months I didn't really notice anything, but such a drastic cut. I think over long term I did start having like stomach problems and stuff like that, which is just, it's not good. But yeah, it was, I didn't notice it for the first wee while. I was just kind of focused on the numbers dropping off the scale, and I think it was like in the first 10 days I lost a stone or something insane. You know, I was
Wow.
working out every, yeah, I was working out every second day. You know, I was hardly eating anything. It was just, it was obviously quite a drastic thing in the first wee, like the first kind of couple of weeks. And then obviously it leveled off as kind of my body started to adjust. And you know, like, don't get me wrong, like I took a picture at my lowest. I did, because I was going to visit my brother at the time. I took a picture of my lowest and I thought I looked good. I didn't look like drastically skinny or anything. I would obviously put on a little bit of muscle as well. But in terms of how I done it, I don't think it was a healthy, well, I know it wasn't a healthy approach, because I did have some other problems which I didn't connect at the time.
Right, okay. So you only know that through hindsight.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you feel as you was doing it? Were you tired, sluggish, bit of brain
No,
foggy? And how did
like
you do
I
it? What
said,
kind of what kind of diet was it? Was it very high protein, just low carbohydrate? Well, like how did you manipulate that, or did you try and keep that as balanced as possible?
Well, but back then I was just looking at the calories number. I didn't look at like in a protein, carbs or
Okay.
fat or anything like that. It was just the calories number. So regardless of what I was eating, you know, some days I'd go out to eat with my friends, and that'd be my entire meal for the entire day, because obviously go out and have a little bit more. Some days when I was being good, you know, it'd be like, you know, having a salad for lunch. Like I'd usually skip breakfast. I'm not a big breakfast person anyway, so
Okay.
I'd usually have like a salad for lunch, and then I'd make something for dinner. You know, like a low fat chili or something like that, and make sure I don't have any rice or bread or chips with it or anything like
Okay.
that. So just kind of, you know, I'd still be making food, but even though the portions would be a lot smaller, or more, what more likely was to happen with me was I'd try and make a quite a low calorie meal, and then just, you know, fill up on that.
Yeah. And how much of your life does or did does fitness take up? Like, is it a high focus in your life? Is it a low focus in your life? Like, where does it kind of sit on the scale of family, work, socializing?
Well, obviously after the wee one came along, the focus kind of jumped up a little bit. Obviously it was, you know, I was basically a stay-at-home dad at that point. I'd taken time off to look after her, so I was, you know, she was my main focus. And then whatever I could fit in around her was kind of, you know, when my wife wasn't working or when we didn't have plans, that was a focus then. And it's kind of stayed like that over
Okay.
the last several years. Obviously, this year, last month, I quit my job. I'm looking at moving into a new field, but while I'm kind of researching and thinking about studying and looking into exactly what I want to do, the focus is really high just now.
Yeah, of
You
course.
know, obviously the gym's opened in Scotland on the 31st. I was in there the first day, and I'm trying to hit four times a week. You know, I take the walk the wee one up to school, I drop it off at school, then I go straight to the gym for an hour to 2 hours, depending on what I'm doing. and then I'll walk home to kind of ease myself off, and then that'll be my workout for the day. So basically my morning is just now during the week are focused on exercise, and then I have like my Wednesday and the weekends are my days off. But obviously my martial arts club starts this weekend, so I'll be doing that, but because I'm an instructor, it won't be as much exercise.
Yeah.
Just now when new people are joining in, the exercise won't really start until further down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the focus just now is quite high.
Okay, that's great. And what is it you used to do for work?
Yeah, I was a retailer. I worked for Tesco.
Okay, and what is it you want to get into?
I'm looking at moving into kind of more third sector work, so working with children and young adults.
Okay,
so,
perfect.
Either in social work or counselling capacity. I haven't really decided yet.
Okay, cool. What kind of draws you to sort of counselling and stuff like that?
Well, I've been volunteering with kids for kind of the last 4 years. And it's just something I want to do something a bit more kind of meaningful, kind of, yeah. You know, something that kind of makes me feel good about what I've kind of put my career into. And don't get me wrong, like Tesco was a great place to work. And the guys were great. And, you know, I was there for over 14 years. So it was a long time to kind of move away from that. And it was quite scary. It still is quite scary to move away from that. But I think at this point in my life where I've been off work looking after the wee one for such a long time, it was probably a good point to take that break and just kind of go for something else.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. That's awesome. So that's all great. What do you find, like, do you find tracking your calories difficult, easy? And what has tracking for such a long period of time, like, what has it taught you about what you eat, how you eat, your eating habits? I know you said that kind of go, you know, it'd be the takeout, it'd be the thing, it'd be the food late at night. I don't know if you've seen my post about does eating late at night affect your fat loss?
I've seen that.
It doesn't affect your fat loss, except the foods that we eat late at night are usually very high calorie, you know, high satiating foods that will just, you know, send you overboard anyway. Like, no one's eating an apple at 10 p.m. at night, are they? Let's face it, we're having beer and crisps. As much as I wish I did eat an apple at 10 p.m. at night, last night I was drinking beer and eating crisps. So it's you know, like, it's that mentality that goes into it. What has this, because you've got a massive body of work, you've probably got, of anyone I've come across in since doing this, you've probably got the biggest body of work in terms of having consistently tracked, having known your numbers so very well. Like, I don't need to educate you in that and how to do that and what to do that, which gives you a great advantage. So the next phase of that is, let's look back on it and what patterns can you see? What have you learned? Where do you think you can dial in, and what things do you think you might be able to change? And just like, whether it's frequency or timing, or I don't like to get too into that, but what do you think that is?
Well, yeah, when it comes to me, it's definitely a kind of, I'm definitely an emotional eater. Like, you know, it's something I've kind of...
Sorry, did you say emotional or social?
Yeah, emotional.
Okay, cool.
I'm so definitely an emotional eater. definitely an emotional eater. Okay. I noticed that the kind of the first year I started tracking, you know, when my mood is low, or, you know, I'm having a bad day, or not, you know, it's a thing I use to cheer myself up. I'm an absolute chocoholic. I have been since I was a teenager. You know, I was the kid that bought, you know, a bottle of Amber and a bar of chocolate on the way to school in the morning, you know.
I thought that was everybody in Scotland.
Yeah, pretty much. you know, it was that's like, you know, I'd skip out breakfast in the morning and, you know, the supermarket was on my way to school. So I'd just pop in and grab
was
whatever
that
I wanted.
By any chance?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so I mean that was just, it's just the way I've always been, you know. And it's my upbringing was, like, you know, Asian households were quite food focused, like big meals.
It's,
you
not
know,
just,
and,
it's not just eat; it's let's really eat, isn't it?
Yeah, you know,
I've got two Asian clients, and it's a wonderful, very fulfilling attitude to have in terms of family, but in terms of weight and relationships with food, it is very, very full on.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that there's definitely a thing with kind of Asian families and, you know, kind of illnesses later on in life. You know, like, I don't know very many people in my family who don't have like diabetes or high blood cholesterol, or, you know.
Is that a worry for you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's, you know, I didn't obviously realize until later on in life that, you know, just not even in terms of food, but just in terms of, you know, my heritage, that those are higher risk factors. And, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not something I really thought about until the wee one came along. But, you know, my goal now is, you know, like in the longevity in terms of being around for as long as I can, and not just being around, but actually being in a kind of fit state to
being able to run up the stairs and being able to play football with her or whatever it is she wants to do. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. And is your wife Asian?
No, no, she's Scottish.
Okay,
cool. White Scottish.
She's Caucasian.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, beautiful. So you're an emotional eater. I mean, to be fair, we kind of all are. We're all emotional eaters. What kind of emotions would drive you to eating?
Just any sort of negative emotions. You know, it's this kind of, I do like my shoot and my chocolatey foods. So it's something I would just kind of have whenever mm-hmm. I was kind of feeling, you know, having a bad day, if I'm really tired, or, you know, if I've had a bad night's sleep, it's something I'll kind of turn to. Obviously, recently this year, I've not been as bad. You know, I've had some bad days during lockdown, you know, just because lockdown was pretty bad. It sucked quite a lot. But since we've come out, since I started going to the gym, it's not been bad. I still generally let myself have like a treat a day. Yeah. You know, obviously I'm buying like small portions and stuff like that, just to kind of get that out of my system type thing, but it seems to be working.
That seems like a great approach. Would it be a big binge? Like, would it be not kind of like a little bar of dairy milk? Would it be like one of those big, huge bars of dairy milk? Or would it be, you know, not just a couple of roses, it'd be a whole tub of miniature heroes? Was it that kind of relationship, or was it just you'd have a bit of chocolate just to calm it down?
I think during lockdown it was quite bad. So during lockdown it was like big portions and big binges and stuff like that.
Okay.
But to be honest, it is that kind of thing. I have written a line under that. You know, that's mm-hmm. just, that was something that just was a bit of a big shock to the system. And I know a lot of people that went through the same thing.
I think that's perfectly understandable. I don't think we should ever hold up lockdown as a period of, oh, I failed myself, I did this, I did that. There was no right or wrong way to do lockdown. We just had to get through it. Everyone just had to figure it out, and what will be, you know. And at, you know, as you've said, you know, you went through years of it coming up, going down, everything else. Like, it was what, 4 or 5 months of our lives. It in the big scheme of things, it's not a big deal. So, you know, if anyone's listening to this, just and you feel like you failed over lockdown, you didn't. You survived it. You got through it, and you're now, you know, on the other side. And hopefully, we can keep everything at bay and keep things open. But we will see. It's a good attitude to have. Just get rid of lockdown.
I think before lockdown, it was you know, when I wasn't focusing so much on, you know, the calorie count or the weight loss or things like that, it would just be the kind of thing, you know, at the end of the night, the way, you know, we'd put the wee one to bed and we'd pull out, you know, a bag, my wife and I pull out a bag of crisps and a bar of chocolate, and we'd share it at the end of the night while we watched, you know, whatever, the kind of end of our day. I think it's kind of the standard stuff that a lot of people do.
Yeah.
But obviously we're trying to get out of that habit just now. Okay. You know, trying not to kind of, and the line I've kind of drawn in the sand is when the wee one goes to bed, I try not to eat anything after that.
Okay. And how's that working out?
It's fine most of the time. I mean, most days it's fine, unless I'm on a night out. Then, you know, it's fairly easy to kind of adhere to. You know, we'll all sit down and have dinner together about 5, 6 o'clock, and then, you know, that'll be kind of that'll be the end of the night for kind of in terms of food and drink and stuff. Sometimes my wife and I'll sit and have a drink. Like I said, sometimes I'll go out and meet a friend for a drink, but it seems to be quite a decent line to kind of draw in. So, you know, kind of 7:30 at night till kind of 8:30 in the morning. Won't really eat anything, which seems to be working.
Yep. I mean, having bright lines like that is really important, and having a bright line that operates around something like so clear in your day as well, like child to bed. She's 6, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's not going to change anytime soon. It's not like she's a toddler and suddenly she's going to be staying up 2 hours extra in 3 months' time or whatever. She's, you can tell I'm not a parent, can't you? I'm sure that doesn't happen, but still. You know, like, you've got a nice bright line that's a very regular place. That's great. What kind of, if you do get the cravings, what kind of things do you do to try and stick to that bright line and making sure that, no, this is it?
No, to be honest, if I do get a craving, I just go for it, because I find that if I don't, then, you know, the craving just builds. So one or two or three days down the line, I'll be worse off.
Yeah.
So I mean, yesterday afternoon, after I got back from the gym, I was knackered, but I was trying to do stuff, and obviously I didn't really have the energy, so I had a bar of chocolate yesterday afternoon. And then, you know, there was a cake sitting in the fridge last night, but then I got tonight and I didn't really want it, so I was just like still sitting in the fridge and I'm fine. So instead of having my treat at the end of the day when the wee one goes to bed, I just had it in the afternoon and that was fine. I find that if I do stop myself, then the craving just builds, which leads to worse things down the line.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's a great attitude to have towards it. And like, and the thing with that is that that takes us into the whole restriction binge mentality, that whole yo-yo mentality, which is something that comes from having a very goal-focused idea. So it comes from, you know, you're saying you was really focused on hitting the numbers, very focused on hitting the weight number, getting down, very goal-focused. And there's something to be said for having a goal. But I like to say to people, it's similar to when I was acting, and we have to very much, we have to learn our lines, right? you can't do Shakespeare without knowing what you got to say, right? You really can't. But you get to a point where you have to know it so well that you can then forget about it. And then all you have to do is just be in the moment. And when you're on stage, if you're thinking about what your next line is, if you're thinking about what you're about to say, if you're thinking about what, you know, if you're worried there's a bit of a sonnet or something that you're just scared about or you haven't mastered, then that's going to show up on stage. You're going to fall out of character. You're not going to be in the moment. You're not going to give your best energy to the other people on stage. And having goals and like goals and processes, is very similar. I can't speak English this morning. Goals is, you know, like the goal was to obviously learn my lines and to perform the best I possibly could. But in order to do that on stage, I have to do the work, I have to prepare, and I have to forget about the lines. The only time when you're on stage you forget what you've got to say is when you are focused and overly worried about what it is you've got to say. When you can just trust that you've done the work and trust that it's inside you, and when you can forget about what you have to say, the words come very naturally. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So maybe make it like
a bit of a weird analogy, but yeah.
I think it's the same thing. Like doing the martial arts I do, you practice until it just becomes muscle memory. You know,
exactly.
You're focusing on muscle memory rather than. And the thing one of my instructors used to say is, you know, when you go into, we do like fighting scenarios and stuff. So when you go into a fighting scenario, you shouldn't be thinking about what you're going to do next. It should all just be reflex. And then, you know, you might remember the first and last thing you've done, but the rest of it's just reflex. And I think I know what you're talking about.
When I used to stand in the wings, I used to panic. I had this little habit of constantly worrying because, you know, I've always lived my entire life thinking I'm not good enough, right? And I used to stand in the stage, stand in the wings, which is like the dark bit before you literally step into the lights. On the side of the stage, and I used to always repeat the first line to me. I'd repeat it, no, it's there, I know. And as long as I knew I had that, I knew the rest would just flow out of me.
Yeah.
But when you're on stage, when you're in that moment, when you're so involved in what it is you're doing, when you're so focused on the process of telling the story of a play, I had no memory of what happened on stage. Unless something went wrong, unless something jarred your flow state, it's just like being on a roller coaster and you look back on it and go, I can't really remember what happened. It's like being in a fugue state. It's great. And I imagine it's very much the same of what you're talking about. It's like footballers. You know, you tell a footballer to shoot at a goal naturally in the middle of a game. We do it most times without thinking about it, you know, and he's perfectly fine. Tell him to take a penalty and suddenly he's overthinking it and suddenly it gets in the way. Suddenly the goal, literally the goal, becomes a problem because he can't just let the process take over itself. Yeah,
I know what you mean.
Yeah. And that's exactly where I think that will be a great place for you to try and get into, to start looking at these daily habits, to start looking at, rather than the goals, it's about going on to the process. I had a good call with a coach called Jodie Walker the other day, and with her, we just said, it's annoying. I can't exactly remember what we said, but it was about having the goal, forgetting about it, and then just allowing each day to be each day. And if you focus on the process, the rest will look after itself. And I think that's great. Like, it's important to still track. It's important to have those daily ticks. Do you track your consistency at all? Do you track, like, and I mean like consistency in terms of, let's say, how many days a week you do have something to eat after your child goes to bed or something like that, and just mark and over a month, see how many days you have done it and how many days you haven't done it.
No, I mean it's all logged in the MyFitnessPal, and okay. MyFitnessPal is broken up into time slots rather than right. you know breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So okay. I kind of track how often I break into the kind of 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. thing mm-hmm. Through that. So just to see, you know, and most of the time it's fine. Most of the time it's just nice out. But yeah, because I track it by time, it lets me kind of see what times a day that I tend to eat more and whether it matches up to my schedule that I'm trying to keep and stuff like that.
And what's the trend? Have you ever calculated days over a month?
Not over that much. I usually just look week to week. I've never done over okay. a month.
Yeah, look at it. See if you're hitting 26 days a month. And if you are, you're doing just fine. 24 to 26 days a month of sticking to a bright line like that is very consistent. That's like an 80% rule. And that's all you need to stick into. And then also you're giving yourself basically over a month, you're giving yourself 7 days of flexibility. And that's lovely. That might seem like too much to you. And if it is, then that's fine. Set yourself maybe a slightly tighter goal. But if you do set yourself a tighter goal, don't beat yourself up if you go over that 80% rule. That's really where it will exist. And by looking at it like that, I think that will very much help you as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good thing to try out as well. I mean, I do tend to look week to week, and then, it's like there is a good thing to kind of stop yourself getting down if you do have a bad week. So yeah, I might go back and look at that once we're off.
Yeah, that's great. And what do you, and you know, I know you mentioned like lower mood and stuff like that. Does your fitness and your results and what you see on the scale and things like that, does that feed into the mood that you experience?
Yeah, I think I did. Obviously the new routine's only been going for like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And because I'm focusing more on kind of routine rather than motivation, I think the schedule's obviously much better. So, you know, like yesterday morning I was in a crappy mood. I did a bad night's sleep. So yeah. But you know, I got up, got the wee one ready for school, we walked up to school.
Went for a walk.
And then, you know, I went to the gym, and you know, it's just what I done. I think the only thing that worries me in terms of that now is my focus at the gym, especially if I'm tired, can be quite bad. So, you know, I woke up this morning and I've got a pain in my knee and a pain in my back and a pain in my shoulder, because obviously I've done something on my left side, but I wasn't, you know, focused on the movement or focused mm-hmm. on the weight as I probably should have been. And that's kind of a recurring thing with me when it comes to sleep. But I'm hoping at the moment, while I'm focused on the routine, then the mood thing is just not going to come into it, because it's just what I do, you know, regardless of what's happening, it's just what I'm going to do, you know.
I love that. That's great. When you're, I mean, I'm one of the most disfocused people working out you will ever know. You give me a half hour workout, I promise you, I'll take 2 hours to do it. I promise you. Okay. My relationship with fitness is, and this will sound crazy being a personal trainer, but my relationship with fitness is very, very, very love hate. And I get all kinds of distracted in the gym for a number of reasons. One, it's like a workspace for me. So it's not a place where I can just forget about things. Sometimes I get into a flow state when I'm in there, sometimes I don't. And it's hard because I track my workouts on my phone. So I'm also checking Instagram and checking work and checking messages and checking in with clients and everything else. Which is my own fault. I should just set up a bright line where I don't do that thing. But, you know, I think if you're aware of you're in a lower mood, if you're aware that you didn't sleep well and stuff like that, then it might be wise to just be conscious of that. And the fact that the win, when you're in a mood like that, the win is you're at the gym. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
The win is you step through the door. So then what you do when you're in there, if that means that, let's take a couple of plates off. Let's give ourselves a 10% deload. Let's work to an RPE of 7 across the workout as opposed to 8-9. Let's just chalk it off as, look, I didn't sleep well, my energy's low, I'm tired, I don't want to hurt myself. I've obviously got an existing knee injury. Let me just be sensible here, okay? I'm here, I'm doing it, I'm giving myself to it, I'm sticking to my routine. Right now, the way I feel, that is the win. Anything else on top of this is a bonus. If that means you lift 5 kilo dumbbells for a whole workout, it's still a win. You've done it. Because doing it is always going to be better than you not doing it. As King Lear says, you know, nothing can come of nothing. If we invest in nothing, we get nothing in return. And so I should come up with Macbeth quotes for you, shouldn't I? Sorry. So you know, like if you are feeling like that, yeah, because if you get an injury here, an injury in your hip, an injury in your knee, it's gonna lead to a swooping in mood. You know, your mood's gonna come lower over a longer period of time, and we don't want that. We want you to enjoy being in the gym. We want you to enjoy being yourself. Enjoy this lifestyle that you're trying to adopt, and you know, just accept the fact that walking through the door, making that commitment to get there, is the biggest win you could have in the gym itself. And therefore, what you do for the next hour of your life, yeah, is entirely up to you. You don't have to beat yourself every single workout, especially if you're working out as much as you are, 4 days a week. You know, I'll talk about progressive overload a lot. I'll talk about, you know, trying to beat your numbers last week and everything else, more reps, more form, whatever it is. It's important, but, you know, doing that 4 times a week on every single lift is really difficult. Yeah, it's not easy. So look for your progressive overload in the sense of you got to the gym, in the sense of just improve your form. Take the weight off to improve your form. That is still a form of progressive overload. Yeah, progressive overload could even be working on muscle-mind connection. When you're doing a squat, can I really feel my hamstrings? Can I really feel my quads? Can I really feel the breath? Can I really feel the tightness in my core to support that bar on my back? Can I, you know, you're doing a bench press, can I feel my pecs pushing together? Am I moving my arms or am I moving my chest? All of these things, that is a form of progressive overload. It's not just about numbers on the bar. It's about how you connect yourself to the method upon which you are working out.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something I have to look at. I mean, I am, like, especially the form thing is, I don't know how good my form is after taking, you know, basically 6 months off. I am trying to figure out how to video myself at the gym. I'll try and get to that at some point, which would be quite good. I think I am quite good at kind of being a lot more flexible now. Like, I was quite strict in the way I liked to do things before, and I think when it didn't meet my expectations, it was obviously a little bit of a hit to kind of my routine and stuff. But I am trying to be a lot more flexible. I mean, like I said, woke up this morning with a couple of aches and pains, so my plan for tomorrow, I'm like, the plan is to drop some weights, just to kind of focus on the form a bit. And, you know, if I'm feeling any tweaks or any kind of pains while I'm doing it, then either to drop it more or just take it out altogether. One of my big goals just now is not to get injured, because obviously it's gonna, you know, I said to you before, the first day I went back to the gym, I lifted like 60%, and I couldn't walk for a week basically, which was really annoying, because the plan was to hit do 4 times, but you know, I done my 2 days, and then I had to take a week off basically. The good thing is, I mean, my workout's split over 2 days, so I'll do half of it on the Monday, half of it on Tuesday, and then repeat on Thursday and Friday.
That's an interesting idea,
so I'm not trying to do the same thing on a Monday and Tuesday. Yeah. And the only reason I'm doing that is just for kind of time's sake, because if I tried to do all of it in one day, it'd be like at least three hours, and I'd probably be destroyed, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that sounds great. You said you're trying to figure out how to record yourself in the gym. What's the difficulty there?
I'm at like a temporary gym just now. So the gym that I used to go to, which is part of the university, wasn't opening until later, and I have to apply for like a special coach's license, because I teach at the uni,
right.
And that takes a couple of weeks to come through. So I've just joined a pure gym in the meantime, and there's not really kind of anywhere to kind of put up my phone that'll actually show what I'm doing.
I appreciate it. Just get a dumbbell. Just get a 10, 15 kilo dumbbell, put that on the floor, and then turn your camera on, put your phone up against the dumbbell, and that'll work as a rest. And then that will probably give me enough, and then upload it into the Fitness Collective. And that'll probably give me enough to see, or just rest it up against the footings of a bench. Or when I record in the gym, most of them are at a slightly upward angle because my camera's on the floor and it's resting up against the dumbbell, it's resting up against the wall, it's resting up against the thing. Like, it's interesting, like, don't look for perfection when just getting something done will be better. And that's true of everything in fitness, right? Yeah. Like, you know, like it's you have a phone, you have a camera, it might not be the perfect piece of footage, but you know what, it's something. And you know, if I say to you that I can't quite see anything out of that, that's fine, then just go back and just try and see if you can do it a different way maybe next time or something like that. But you'd be surprised, like, you know, you'd be surprised what a floor angle can do. As long as, you know, if it's a squat, a side angle would be great, and maybe a back angle. But you know, and you can just move the dumbbell, move the camera, and people are getting so much more used to it. I mean, I go to the gym with a Joby tripod, and I sometimes attach a big kind of Rode mic to it as well. But I do that less and less these days because recording sound in the gym is really hard. And so I just put it on the floor and people don't bat an eyelid at it anymore. You know, we're getting more and more used to it, I think. And I think the person who's most self-conscious about it is you.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I've never recorded myself at the gym, so it's definitely like a step to kind of take. Uh-huh. But I think that that whole kind of perfection thing definitely does. You know, I'm always looking for that, like, kind of perfect. You know, I'm all about efficiency. It's part of my whole kind of, you know, being a bit of a control freak and focusing on goals and stuff.
That's really interesting. All about efficiency. Yeah, what you're doing is you're not being efficient because you're not actually doing anything.
Yeah, yeah. So when I go to the gym, I want to like have the most efficient, you know, pushing myself to the brink workout that I can, and that's what I used to go for before. So you know, if I wasn't, you know, back beforehand, if I wasn't able to walk the next day, I'd be like, yeah, I pushed myself really hard, that's great. Whereas when I got to the next workout, if I was still sore, I'd be like, oh no, this ruined everything, and I'd let it get me down. Whereas now, obviously, because I'm working my way up very slowly and trying to be a lot more flexible, it does seem to be a. And the thing is, like every time I do this, every time I get back into kind of like a fitness cycle, whether it's over a year or 2 years or whatever, I do learn from the last time. So I do feel a bit better about it each time. But, you know, I don't want to keep doing that. I don't want to get on that. So I want to kind of
bring that trend. It's similar to what I say to people about kind of their blood sugar levels. Like I'm not talking insulin. I'm not talking diabetes or anything like that. But when I first started as a personal trainer, like I knew nothing. I've had to learn fitness in like the quickest time possible. It's like a lot of people will get themselves very fit. A lot of people will build great muscle and everything else. And then it'll be like, oh, look at me. I'm going to become a personal trainer. I was the complete opposite. You've probably seen plenty of photos of me. I don't look like a personal trainer, what you probably think a personal trainer should look like. And it's a bit like driving. You know, you don't learn to drive until you pass. It's similar with being a PT. I didn't really know much about fitness at all. One thing I was aware of though was the glycemic index. And do you know what the glycemic index is?
Not really. I've heard of it, but
yeah. So each food is rated in terms of how it affects your blood sugar levels. And it has a score. I think it's out of 100. It has a score that score is how much kind of glucose it will create in your blood as you eat it. And what that means is obviously you'll get a blood sugar spike. So, and then insulin will kick in and it will bring it down. And so obviously the high sugar foods, i.e. Coca-Cola, chocolate, things like that. And it's why we get such great energy after we eat something like that. But then what happens is we have a much greater crash after. So, you know, we'll eat a dairy milk, our blood sugar will raise up to a certain level. And then what will happen is you'll start coming down and you'll start coming down as quickly as it went up. But then also what will happen is you'll crash, your energy and your mood will drop lower than where it started. And then what do? You think, God, I'm so tired. So you'll have a coffee, you'll have another Coke, you'll have another bit of chocolate, and then you'll go up again, and then you'll drop again, and then you'll go up again, and then you'll drop again. And all day, you're just chasing this energy that never exists. And you don't know why, because you're eating these kinds of things and your blood sugars are basically all over the place. So when I first started, one thing I was very keenly aware of and what I tried to educate my very early clients on was, we want to get a kind of a nice, very steady curve over the day of your blood sugar levels. Like we want a nice, very beautiful little arc where we peak just about at the right moment when you need the most energy, sort of midday, 2 p.m. kind of around there. And then slowly let it fade so you're ready for bed. So you're kind of in rhythm with the sun almost. And that's kind of what it feels like to me. You kind of need to try and adopt in terms of your attitude to exercise, your attitude to how are you going to shape this for longevity's sake? How are you going to shape it, you know, over a month, over 2 months, over a 4 month block, over a year? How are you going to create that beautiful curve and then take the rest that you deserve, like have a season? How, you know, you might at some point, you might just need a month off once you've done it for a long period of time, and then you can come back with renewed energy and go again. And whereas if you kind of chase the DOMS, if you chase that, let's go really hard, and then you're going to crash even further and your mood comes down, and then you're going to try and get yourself up again. That is really tiring and it takes a lot of energy and it's really difficult. one of the key advantages to my fiance is when she works out is she is a devil for habit and she's so consistent with it. But what she isn't overly consistent with in the gym, she's got a lot better with it at the moment, but when she was working, she did shift patterns and stuff like that. She, you know, she'd very much just kind of listen to herself and she'd be like, oh, I'm done now. I've had enough here. Like, I don't want to push myself too much. Like, and to her, the key was getting into the gym and getting it done, putting in a couple of great lifts and then coming out and just being like, that's fine. I'm happy with that. It's done. And she very much did that. She very much controlled her energy and she'd be in the gym 4 or 5 times a week.
Nice.
Yeah. So I think that's probably a good way of looking at it. And when you think you've walked out of the gym and you might not have done this enough, you might not have done that, you might not have hit that peak that you kind of wanted, just think, we're not looking for peaks. We're looking for a nice, steady build of consistency. Yeah. And then if you frame it like that, see where that workout fits in terms of that arc, and you'll probably have a much better feeling. You'll probably have a much better attitude towards it. And it will help you keep your motivation going because you're not having to use more energy to get yourself up and ready for the gym.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a good shout. But I actually did want to touch on something you said. Yeah. The something you mentioned that I totally forgot about that you've just kind of reminded me of. You talked about doing like...
I talk a lot.
Yeah, you talked about doing cycles, like weightlifting cycles at the gym. What did you mean by that?
In the conversation today?
No, not today. It's something you... Something like I asked a question a while back and you talked about like... I don't know if cycling was the exact right word you used, but talking about cycling, the weightlifting.
Season, something like that. So I had a client, the very first client, it was called a client zero. She basically created the gym starter, bless her, Gemma. She's a wonderful human, dear friend. She's just got married, so happy for her. She's married one of my childhood friends who used to live next door to me, so it's a real happy story. And interestingly, she went to her wedding in a funeral car, like in a hearse, because she works in a morgue. I think there's more to that than meets the eye, but no, we won't get into that. I'm sure she'll be very happy and I'll wish her all the best, obviously. But she, I trained her. She said to me, right, I need to get this fitness stuff going. And she knew that I'd kind of just qualified as a PT, I think. And we had a great relationship and I've trained her on and off the whole 5 years I've been a personal trainer and I always go to her for advice and stuff. And she's very much telling me who I am, what I'm about. And I appreciate her feedback a lot. I appreciate everyone's feedback a lot, but you know, you just have these people you rely on. And I trained her and she got to a point where, and this was one of the biggest lessons I've learned. Well, not one of, but it's up there as a personal trainer. And we was kind of going at it. We'd probably been at it for about 9 months at this point, maybe twice a week. She'd been dieting for a long period of time and she'd been working hard and she'd been doing very well. And she was just like, I'm just out of energy. I've just got no, like, I can't even think about it anymore. And I just looked at her when it makes sense. She was like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, think about all professional sports in the world. Like all professional sports have seasons. And these are professional athletes performing at a high, you know, they're very fit people. Really, they're the people in the world who should be able to do it all year round. But they can't because I don't think anyone can. Like, and then if we bring it down to kind of how we work out, like we push ourselves to the most athletic ability that we possibly can. Like I will push myself to the same level that Wayne Rooney will push himself to. Just he's a lot fitter than I am. So, you know, but we're both working at say 90% or 100% of our own personal output. And for as long as you're doing that, you can only do that for a certain period of time. You can only do that for a season. If it comes to dieting, if you're dieting for, you know, if you're on a calorie deficit for 6 months, you know, you're going to run out of energy. And it's right and fair that you give yourself seasons. You give yourself these structured breaks, which is why I was so proud to create the calorie manual where I talk about maintenance and I talk about, you know, you have to structure these breaks in. You have to give yourself a 2-year plan and go every 6 weeks, every 3 months, every whatever feels right for you, you're going to give yourself a period away from a calorie deficit because sometimes we have to regress in order to progress. You know, we have to take 2 steps back to take another 10 forward. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think in weightlifting, that's very important. In the gym, you know, clever programming gives you kind of I do 4 month cycles of a 60% week, a 70% week, an 80% week, a 90% week. And that 60% week is there for a reason, because you need to recharge. You need to give yourself some time away. You know, if you go 3 months going at 90%, you're going to burn out. You're not going to survive. And it's all about giving yourself a much longer mindset. It's all about giving yourself a much bigger perspective, a bigger context, and a bigger understanding of the time it all takes. You know, if you wanted to get in shape for a wedding, I'd give you a completely different attitude. I'd be like, come on, this is the plan. You've got 12 weeks. You've got to do your best. And I just need you to keep your motivation high for 12 weeks. But then what I wouldn't expect is you to carry that on after your wedding, because we've designed that program to exhaust you for a goal so you can get to where you need to be for that period of time. How we're working, how the Fitness Collective works, how I work with most of my clients is, and that's why I try and make things as affordable as I possibly can for people, because I'm not in it to help you for 12 weeks so that you then crash and burn at the end of it and I just get a nice progress picture. I need, you know, this takes the time it takes. And it's very important that you give yourself these breaks, you listen to yourself. You're a human being, for God's sake. You're not a robot, you're not a machine. And that humanity is something that you have to take on board in your fitness like you do anything else.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely, like you said, you know, obviously I think I've been following you since kind of the start of the year.
Yeah.
And it's definitely something I noticed with, it was through Instagram that I found you. So when I went on Instagram and I started looking at kind of hashtags for, like I started, you know, seeing the list for hashtags of this, that, looking at fitness and stuff like that. And, you know, after looking at, you know, probably dozens, if not hundreds of different kind of pages and profiles and hashtags and stuff, I now follow three, and the three that I follow just seem to be the most kind of down to earth, common sense, no BS, like none of this, like, you know, get shredded in eight weeks and all that. Yeah. I can't be bothered with that stuff. I just, yeah. You know, my goals, like, you know, my goals before this were always like, you know, I'd get to January and I'd be like, right, I've got 11 months to hit this target. And, you know, for a lot of people, 11 months is a long term goal. And I'm just like, well, in my head, that's not really, and it's you know, I'm talking about years, but all these kind of, like, you know, and there's still some of them that pop up in my feed sometimes, and it's like, you know, come to our 12-week program, get the body you always wanted. And I was like, yeah, I've done the 12-week crash and burn thing. Yeah. And yeah, it's great, you know, it looks great after 12 weeks, but after 12 months it's just like, you know, what's the point?
Ben Carpenter put up a really good video on Instagram about progress photos, and it's what made me write the blog about your work in process. I call them work in process photos. And in that, he says, I could take 100 people and I could get them all to do a salad reduced diet, right? Now, after a week of that, I could have 50 people left of that 100. After another week of that, so we're now 50% of the way in, I could have maybe 25 people still doing it. After a month, I might end up with 3 or 4 people who actually managed to do the celery juice diet for a month. I'll get great before and after photos because they will have lost a lot of weight. But what I'm not telling you is this program has only a success rate of 4%. It doesn't have a success rate of 100%. But how I'm selling it to you is that it's a success rate of 100% because you're seeing these 4 success stories. And, you know, these people, they're not honest about that. And it's a big problem in the industry. I mean, there's a place for it, you know, shredding for a wedding. God, I hate that phrase. I can't believe I just said it. You know, or whatever it might be. But, you know, like you said, what is the goal? Surely the goal of our health and fitness is to grow old, is to be able to walk when we're 80, is to be able to pick up our grandchildren, is to not have to go in for heart surgery, is to take pressure off the NHS, is to just not let our health and our fitness and our diet become something that we need healthcare for in the future, because it's something that we can manage and we can control, but we can do that over an extremely long period of time. If that is your goal, then why is 12 months too long? Why is even a decade too long? You know, like a decade, your child will be 16 years old, yeah? And she'll be a fantastic, beautiful person, I'm sure of it. But she's still nowhere near having, hopefully she's still nowhere near having, you're nowhere near having grandchildren at that point. That's a decade, you know? And if you can still, you know, if you can see improvement from the day we have this call to when your child is 16, and you still feel healthy, you still feel great, you've not got any complications or anything like that, then you are winning at life. And it's like the game of life. You know, I used to hate playing that because it used to take such a long time. But there's a lesson in that, right? It's meant to.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think it's so easy to kind of, and I think it is a thing a lot of people fall into the trap of boxing yourself into a year. Yeah. And that's what's happened to me every other year. You know, I've boxed myself into 1 year, you know, or not even a year. I always give myself 11 months. It's like, you know, middle of January to middle of December because you're right off Christmas and stuff. And, you know, you can make some good results, but then, you know, you look at the year after. And, you know, I was saying, like, you know, that June last year, I'd obviously hit like a really good number and I'd managed to keep that until March this year. And that's the longest I've done it for because I wasn't looking at the year, you know. Yeah. I was looking a bit longer. I think the first year is what you give yourself to get into that routine, to give yourself that mindset. And then after that, you're not looking to do more. You're just looking to maintain that and keep it consistent. And you know, it's hard because year on year your life changes anyway. Until you get a bit older, until you've had your kids and stuff, then things are constantly changing. So I think it's a hard thing to do. But I think I'm at a stage in life. You know what I'm doing now, I couldn't have done 10 years ago. You know, 10 years ago I got married and then you know we bought our house and we didn't have kids and stuff. It was a completely different life. I couldn't do what I'm doing now 10 years ago. So I do take a bit of kind of, I'm softer on myself because I know I couldn't have done it 10 years ago. So I'm not like, oh, you wasted the last 10 years or, you know, all of your life not fixing yourself, because now's the time that I feel like it can all fit in the way I want it to.
And that as well, I think is wildly important as well. It's making sure you have that understanding of yourself. Like I'm always of the attitude of, I'm sure you've seen me say it so many times, your past doesn't define your future. It informs it. It informs who you are now. It's not about, I wasted 10 years of my life. It's not about, I'm 40, I live at home, I don't have any children or whatever. It's not about that meaning you've lost the 40 years of your life. That's about, that's who you are, right? That has allowed you to become who you are now. That doesn't have to dictate who you're going to be in the next 10 years of your life. You can change that as long as you put energy into it, as long as you allow it. And also you have to have an understanding that, you know, life just wasn't possible for whatever reason. You know, like for instance, I was hoping to get married next year. Right now my fiance is on the other side of the world. We've had to consider and talk about delaying our wedding because we don't know whether, not only do we not know whether her relatives that are in a different state in Australia can come up to where we want to get married, I don't know if my parents can get from England to Australia at the moment, even next year, in order to see us get married. And you just have to accept, you know, I could sit here and bitch and moan about it and everything else, but we don't know when life is going to deal us these hands. And I think we have to react, we have to understand, we have to have empathy with ourselves, and we have to have empathy with who we were, and allow that empathy to allow us to continue to have empathy with who we presently are.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think you've hit it quite hard where it's, you know, doing what I do with like the volunteering with kids and stuff, like, obviously empathy is a massive, massive part of it. And it's, and you know, as a decent person.
Are they kids who don't have a lot of empathy in their lives?
Well, no, it's all different reasons. You know, it's the children's panel I work on. Right. It's the children's panel that I volunteer on, so all the kids that have come into it for a reason, and you know, some of them are great kids that are just having a hard time, or the parents are great parents and having a hard time, whatever it is. And it's interesting the people that do that and how much empathy they show. And then you do think about, actually, how much empathy do you show yourself? How hard are you on yourself? And I was raised to be quite a, you know, there was a lot of expectation, so I hold myself to it.
Was it that, you know, whenever I hear that, it's always, I always think of that. Do you remember Goodness Gracious Me?
Yes, absolutely that. Absolutely.
I remember there was a sketch where there was like two parents in the kitchen.
Like the 10-year-old boy.
Yeah, and they were talking about his results. Like, he's aced piano, he's Mozart, he's got a degree, he's got 3 degrees in chemistry, science and biology, but he got like, I don't know, a B in English. And he's like, that's not good enough. And then it just pans to this 10-year-old kid who sat on the worktop going, what did I do wrong?
Yeah, that's absolutely what it is. And, you know,
fair enough.
My, We used to gather around the TV to watch it as a family.
Did you?
And it was just the kind of thing where it was absolutely hilarious because half of it's basically true.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Yeah.
And there was definitely that sort of thing. I mean, I was like, you know, the third or fourth person in my family to go to uni, so there always was like a very high expectation. And I think because of that, the way I was raised, I have quite high expectations of myself, and it's never the standard I would hold my wife to, my daughter to. But obviously, I'm a lot harder on myself than I am on other people, which is ridiculous. I mean, why would you do that to yourself? Because you know the chances of being able to meet that goal is just unreal. It's completely unreal. Mm. You know, and I went from that to working in a supermarket, which is, you know, for me, it was all about convenience. Like the job was completely convenient, fit around my lifestyle, fit around my family. And that's what I ended up choosing. And it's only now, you know, I went to uni 18 years ago. It's 18 years later that I'm now like, okay, this is what I'm going to think about doing. This is, I'm thinking about going back into education now, because at 18 years old, I didn't know what I wanted to do. All I knew that was I had to go to uni because, you know, this is what is expected.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah,
but yeah, definitely being softer on yourself, I think, is the way to go. And the thing I say to my friends is, you know, there's no shame in failure. The only shame comes from not learning from your mistakes. Like if you've learned something, even if it's really small, then you know you could take that on and move forward. And you know, because why would you punish yourself for something you didn't have a clue about?
That is literally it. That is it. There's nothing else to say on that, really. I've always said, I don't care what mistakes people make, as long as they learn from them, as long as they like, I only ever ask of two things of my clients, basically. And it's one, that they try their best. And it's two, that they're honest with me. And I suppose that they're honest with themselves. And that's all we need. As long as we have that understanding, as long as we have that driving forward our relationship, then we're never going to have any problems. There's never going to be any, there's never going to be any animosity. There's never going to be any kind of like, you're disappointing me, you're letting me down, you're letting yourself down. There's going to be no talk like that, because I wouldn't let you, like, it's interesting. Like, I've had a tough time with it, I think, of the last month or so. Like, I don't know, I felt very low, very worried, and I had some major health problems about a month. Well, not major, that's a complete lie. It wasn't major health problems. But I had some health problems about a month ago, just with my stomach, and things weren't right and stuff. And it was stressing me out, and it just stresses me out for no reason at all. And I'm not very good at keeping, when I'm not well, I'm not very good at it, not knowing how to fix it. Like, I can't just say, well, it's one of those things. I have to get to the bottom of it, and I have to know what I've got to do in order to fix it. And so that stresses me out. And then, like, combine that with trying to work, trying to rebuild my business that's kind of taken a big hit over COVID, which is lovely, and it's allowed me to help people like you and stuff. And then combine that with obviously my fiance, and I sat down and wrote a list of all the things I've been through over the last kind of year. And I was still beating myself up over it all. And I was like, this is ridiculous. If my friend held me this list, I'd be like, come on, let's go for a beer and let's just have a chat and let's relax. You know, that's all we need to do, because you just need that empathy. You need that self-love. Like, and I think it's a great marker. Would you talk to your daughter like that? Would you hold your wife to that same degree of scrutiny? And if the answer is no, then why are you doing it to yourself? Would she talk to you like that? Would your daughter talk to you like that? No. So why would you do it to yourself? And if you catch yourself thinking like that, just close your eyes and just imagine you're having this conversation with your wife. What would she be saying to you? And once you can do that, once you can visualize that conversation, I bet it would all just dissipate. It all just fade away. And you'd be like, I've got context. And that's what it comes down to. It's about all, we so easily in this world forget our context. We forget, you know, the bigger picture of everything. And we forget what we've been through and what we've gone through and what we're dealing with right now. Because we just, I don't know what it is. We just do. We just always forget that. And we forget our own understanding. And I think that's why we lose empathy for ourselves, you know. I mean, I work most days. I don't have weekends. I'm always doing something, as you can probably see. Whether it's, you know, some days it might just be one Instagram post, but other days it's definitely a lot more than that. And it takes its toll. And like, you know, and it's been weird over the last couple of weeks since I had my four wisdom teeth out, because I've just been laying in bed, not doing a lot, watching telly. I'm like, okay, this is weird now. Like, why am I doing this? Why? And Talia would just say to me, Well, of course, you know, you're entitled to a break and you've just had major surgery. I'm like, yeah, but was it major? It was just my mouth. She was like, you was under general anesthetic. It was major surgery. I was like, okay, yeah. Give yourself time to recover. Okay. And I think it's been good for me because I feel like I've refreshed my energy. And but there were times I was beating myself up. I wasn't doing enough. I wasn't being good enough. I wasn't focused enough. I wasn't finding clients enough. I wasn't doing this, wasn't doing that. And it did overwhelm me. But then I turned on Better Call Saul and managed to forget about it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, you definitely need your down days. And even like, you know, week to week, like Wednesday is usually my kind of down day, you know. I try and get all the chores done around the house, you know, get the wee one to school, and you know, I come home on a Wednesday and I usually just kind of chill out, or I go and try and meet a friend for lunch. And I think it's definitely and I'm definitely the sort of person that, you know, in a week I do need like a half a day of downtime, whether it's, you know, listening to music or reading a book, or usually just like having some random TV on in the background.
And I'm hearing that and I'm thinking, is that enough? Is half a day seriously enough for you? Do you need more
half a day? Half a day is kind of the minimum of kind of what I do in a week. You know, obviously I usually have a little bit of downtime each day, whether it's you know and that's fine, but half a day is kind of the minimum I need to kind of keep myself going. If I have a full week of just a full on, then I'm, by the end of it I'm broken and I'm just, you know, lying in bed for 2 days.
Give yourself, you know, trust yourself, give yourself more. I think that if you've got so much in place, you've got a lovely attitude, you're incredibly intelligent when it comes to it all, you've vastly experienced, and now it's just a case of ticking off the days, it's a case of keeping your routine in place, and it's a case of very much just, it's just a case, just be you. And that's quite that, I kind of feel like that's all you need. You just need to be you. You just need to trust yourself, enjoy the ride, and it's going to happen. All what you want is going to happen if you can just basically stick to everything we've spoken about today. And it will be great. And when things start to go awry, like always, reach out, you know, send me a message, put something in the collective, whatever you need, and we'll talk about it again, and we'll recharge and we'll go again. And that's perfectly reasonable. I mean, I think you've always impressed me. Like the questions you used to ask me on my lives and stuff like that on Instagram were always really insightful and great. And it was great to help. And, you know, you could tell that you had you vibrated in a certain way for fitness, which was great. And now the fact that you're taking this new attitude to it, this new approach to it, and you know, if you start focusing on the numbers, you know how to retreat, you know what to do, you know how to pull yourself away and just get back to that process. Think about what you got to do again, and really where the success will lie for when your child is 16, not when she is 7. And that's going to be huge for you. Absolutely huge.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. Like, is that keeping my head and reined in.
yeah, absolutely. And it's hard because you're going to have to fight a lot of nurtured instincts within you. You're going to have to fight a lot of what you've been brought up to think otherwise and stuff like that. But, you know, like, as much as you have high kind of expectations in terms of achievement and stuff like that, I'm sure your parents, if you sat down with them and had a chat with them, I'm sure they'd say there'd be no greater expectation of them than for you to love yourself. They'd want nothing more for you than for you to love yourself. I'm sure your whole family would agree with that, because what parent doesn't truly want that for their child? And if that means that you approach life in this manner, if that means that you're, you know, you take weight off of the bar because that is actually you loving yourself, not you trying to work on achievement, then learning to love yourself in that way, there is no greater achievement. There is no greater weight you can lift that will make that better. That is your goal. That is the final result.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's definitely a way to look at it. Just need to remember it.
Yeah, absolutely. Write it down. Say it to yourself in the mirror every morning. Have a self-affirmation. Okay, empathy. All right, how am I talking to myself today? All right, and I think you'll do just absolutely fine. Is there anything else you want to touch on?
No, I mean, that's good. Like, I'm sure the crazy specific questions will come to me. I'll pop them into the Instagram chat.
I know exactly what will happen. We'll hang up and you'll be like, damn it, why didn't I ask that? One thing I was going to say in terms of like exercise videos and stuff like that, like one, just go and get them done in the gym, right? Honestly, you know, it will take 2 seconds of your life. If it ain't good enough, it's not the end of the world. And I'm sure I'll be asking something. But, you know, if it's a squat technique question, if it's, you know, you'd be surprised what you might be able to do at home without weights around you and stuff like that. So even record it at home. It doesn't have to be in the gym. Obviously, if it's a barbell, if it's a deadlift, then you need the gym. But you'd be surprised, even just with body weight, just doing the deadlift motion, you'd be surprised what I might be able to see and stuff like that. So whatever it is nagging you, get the videos into the collective and I'll sit down and I'll talk about them and I'll give you some helpful advice on them, I hope, if you need it.
Yeah, cool. No, that's a good idea. I might give that a go.
Yeah, brilliant. I can't wait. Super. Right, well, you have an awesome day. Enjoy your day off on a Wednesday. and hopefully keep up with the squat challenge and I'll see you very, very soon.
Cool, that's great. Thanks, man.
Perfect, buddy. I'll speak to you later. Bye.
See you later. Bye.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode of The Fitness Solution. It was a real treat to talk to Atifa and get him on a track and open up his eyes to hopefully what his fitness journey is going to look like over the next number of years, as we discussed so well. I'm sure there'll be ups and downs like there is in every fitness journey, and it's going to be an absolute delight to see what he achieves and how far he can go this time around with this new, fresh attitude that hopefully he's now got. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And don't forget, if you need anything in terms of what I offer in terms of fitness and coaching, then just head to www.thegymstarter.com. Have a great day. And hopefully I'll see you again next week.